For preparing meals, some things are indispensable, but familiarity can breed carelessness. And then I am painfully reminded that there are things worth respecting. Today on Storyline, we find out what happens when we lose respect for the most important things in life. Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantel Klingbeil. Thank you for joining me. We're coming to you live. Now, this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you're very welcome to do so throughout our show. It's simple and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or text. For more instant interaction, find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories. We're not talking those bedtime stories or children's stories. We're talking about real, true-to-life stories of Bible characters that faced issues, challenges, faith questions. People like us who were confronted by change and crisis. In Storyline, we focus on these Bible characters. As we step into their world to study life from their perspective, we can see our own challenges and issues mirrored. Studying these Bible characters gives us new perspectives for our lives. And the best part of it all is that in these storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Sometimes it's easy to take the most important things for granted. These are the things that we all should have a healthy respect for. Most of us respect electricity, which is why we don't climb around on high voltage power lines. We respect water, which is why we generally don't jump into the deep end of the pool if we can't swim. But what happens when we lose our respect for God? If you have a Bible nearby, you can find the short, puzzling story of a group of youths who had lost respect for God and his messenger in 2 Kings 2, verse 23 and 24. Let's rewind about 2,800 years. Elisha, the prophet, was traveling by foot. Near the city of Bethel, he ran into a crowd of youths who were just hanging out. Bethel was the center for idolatry in the northern kingdom, and business from the worship center must have been good, very good. Their peers would have been busy working at industry or out in the fields and couldn't afford to just hang out. Then, as now, just hanging out aimlessly with no particular purpose is not a good idea. The devil finds work for idle hands. I wonder how Elisha was recognized. Perhaps it was his cloak that he had inherited from the prophet Elijah that gave him away. Or perhaps someone had seen the two prophets together on a previous journey. Well, whatever it was, someone must have whispered, "That's the great prophet Elisha." And suddenly, the crowd of bored youths had found something to do. The crowd followed Elisha and started taunting him. Someone shouted, "Hey, bald head, are you planning on going up?" The crowd roared their appreciation and closed in on him. Soon everyone was shouting, "Hey, bald head, let's see you go up." We are several thousand years removed from this incident, and yet even to us, their behavior seems rude. But in an ancient culture,
in which respect was so highly valued, their behavior was shocking. Then, as now, it's easy to make fun over something which someone doesn't have control over. It seems that Elisha was bald. Those youths seem to have deliberately forgotten that they had uncles and fathers who were going bald, or that they themselves may one day go bald. Although it's hard to say, some Bible commentators suggest that the bald head also had sexual connotations and that these youths were being deliberately vulgar. I wouldn't put it past them. While we may not be too clear about the bald head part, the going up part of the taunt is crystal clear. Jericho was not far from Bethel, and in Bethel there was a school of the prophets. At that school, Elijah and Elisha had spent some time before miraculously crossing over the Jordan River to be part of one of the most spectacular events in history. After crossing over the Jordan, a chariot with what seemed to be flaming horses swooped down out of the sky and picked Elijah up and took him up to heaven. But before he went, he dropped his cloak onto Elisha, who was a God-appointed successor to him. People from across the Jordan witnessed this spectacular event and spread the news far and near. The taunt, "Hey, bald head, go up," was a lot more than just making fun of an older man. They were referring to this miraculous event of Elijah being taken up to heaven. And instead of this event inspiring them with a sense of awe and respect, they had chosen to make the whole thing nothing more than one gigantic joke. They were making God, the God who had given each one of them life, nothing more than a vulgar jest. Elisha stopped and looked at the youths. Perhaps he locked eyes with a few of the ringleaders. They stared back defiantly. And then Elisha cursed them in the name of God. Curses have no effect except where they are deserved. Immediately out of the underbrush, two bears appeared and mauled 42 of the youths. There are some things we shouldn't be messing around with for our own good. Perhaps you heard about the man who was mauled and bitten by a panda bear. Apparently, the man had broken into the panda enclosure at the zoo and was trying to hug the bear. He seems to have forgotten that even zoo animals are creatures in their own right and not there to cater to our every whim. They deserve respect. We have with us in the studio Michael Schwedick. Welcome to Storyline, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Chantel.
And he has something very special for us. Right after the break, he'll be showing us an animal that should be handled with care. My guest tonight has been educating more than 10,000 audiences of animal lovers to his collection of reptiles and crocodilia for the last 40 years. He has one of the largest private reptile collections in the country, and he's been featured in newspapers and magazines, including National Geographic World. Today, he's introducing us to one animal that may make some of our viewers a little nervous, and you'll notice that I am keeping a healthy respect away from Cookie. I understand that's her name?
Yes, Cookie's a young African Nile crocodile. Crocodiles are tropical reptiles that are found throughout Central and South America, Africa, Asia, Australia. Nile crocodiles grow to be the largest of the African reptiles.
Okay. How large are we talking?
Well, to put it in perspective, when she was born, she was about the length of a hot dog. Big adults can pull 500-pound Cape buffalo into the river. And for those people that share so much of their lives with rivers, people have to be so very careful.
So we're talking about a big animal.
Yes, big adults sometimes reach 20 feet in length. Males get much bigger than females. And crocodiles can be so difficult to see in the wild.
Why are they so difficult to see?
To begin with, underwater, especially in clouded water, crocs hide near the water's edge. Underwater with mouths open, ears and nostrils closed, goggle-like eyelids in place.
Okay.
They wait for animals to...
Could you show us where are her ears? I don't see
sure,
any ears here.
The ears are right
behind the eyes?
Yes.
I see tiny little slits over there.
Absolutely.
And the nostril, this is on the end of her snout?
Right on the top
okay,
at the end.
The top.
And they're valve-like, so that when they submerge, everything...
Is it closed at the moment or open?
They're both open.
She's opened it at the moment.
Yes.
And how old is Cookie?
This crocodile is almost 3 years old. She was born in captivity.
Okay, so she's used to you handling her.
Well, she's a little more accustomed to being handled than a croc that I would pick up from the edge of a river in the wild. The more I hold her, the less she's afraid, the less she feels the need to bite. The more she is afraid, the more likely she would try to bite. When she tries to bite me, I don't stop her. I just keep my body parts away from her teeth.
Okay.
No matter how much we like them, no matter how well we care for them, they're always wild animals.
I hear a tone of great respect over here. I just saw a clip of a man that actually put his head into the mouth of an enormous crocodile. It looked like one of those fully grown ones. And I thought to myself, wow, we seem to have lost a healthy respect for wild animals over here. Why is it important to maintain respect?
I think when children grow up with a respect, or when children grow up with an appreciation for wildlife, which can be developed through exposure to wildlife, they do grow up with a greater respect for wildlife. But especially with so much of what kids see on television today, they don't always understand that putting your head in the mouth of an alligator or crocodile has never been a good idea or a safe thing to do.
No, not at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are amazing creatures.
Now, I see you, when you picked her up, you held her under her tail and behind her throat. How does your respect for this crocodile handle or relate in your handling of her?
Well, when I pick her up, it's important that I support her body weight so she doesn't feel at all like she's going to fall. Because, of course, crocodiles are never in the air.
Just as like puppies or any other animal.
That is exactly right. And what she doesn't know, what she'll never know, is that I'm almost not even holding her. I'm almost not even holding her.
I could see, yes.
And when she needs to move, I give her the ability to move. And I always hold her in a way that what she sees largely in front of her is space. So in an attempt to get away, in
she
other words, we're not
room.
Crowding her.
You don't crowd
we're
her
absolutely
in. So there's two room. Things. You said you give her a sense of security and you give her a sense of freedom. Those are the two keys in respecting this animal.
While holding her in such a way that she can't hurt herself trying to bite me. The only time I've ever been hurt by a reptile...
Yeah, I was going to ask, have you been bitten by her?
I've been no, I haven't, but I have been bitten by a much bigger crocodile. I had my left hand crushed many years ago.
Wow.
It took me 20 years of handling crocodiles to make a careless mistake. I'm only bitten by reptiles when I make a careless mistake. I have learned a lot from my mistakes, and so have the Johns Hopkins doctors that have always helped me. Yes.
So you're telling me that even familiarity, even handling animals for 40 years, there's never a moment where you can relax and say, you know, I know these animals, I can just do what I like with them.
No, I think when you start to think that way, you quickly set yourself up to be hurt. You saw the change in her behavior from the camera people moving, and that's fine. She just went from calling her mother that
I heard
subtle
that,
crying
that high
sound.
Peeping noise.
Her behavior's completely changed now.
Oh, yes.
You see
she's
how
very aggressive.
She's opened her eyes. Mm-hmm. She's giving us a vocalization. If a person for one moment could hold this crocodile, they would understand why that when she gets 12 inches longer and quadruples her weight, I probably won't be strong enough to hold on to her.
So she's probably got another year of handling, and then you will have to let her be?
Well, then there will be a point in the near future when just picking her up and holding her like this will completely stop. And that's because at that point, she has the strength. Animal strength makes human strength seem insignificant. And for the hundreds of millions of people that have to share their space with these creatures, you know, when we need water, we go to the sink, we get a bottle of water. Mm-hmm. But most of the world gets their water from rivers and lakes. And there are so many people that every day, if we think our struggles are difficult, just getting water safely can be
very
difficult.
Where you have to meet Cookie's mother or father at the river, I suspect this would be pretty challenging. Tell me a little bit about her mouth. It's so big and open here. I see it's completely closed. She closes it when she's in water.
Yes.
So she doesn't drink and swallow water.
Well, in other words, a lot of the water she gets is from the food that she eats, but she certainly can drink water. She went into a defensive posture a moment ago, and that caused her to do something reptiles are very famous for, and that was to use intimidation.
Oh, yes, and that was intimidating.
Yes, she opened her mouth. She gave us a vocal-type warning. Mm-hmm. We could see that her eyes got much, much bigger, and she certainly, if I were just to put her on the table and let go of her, she would share with everyone in the studio quickly what bolting is all about.
She'd just want to make a run for it.
Yes.
And we'd be making a run for it, too.
Well, yes, and of course, she isn't being mean. She's being a crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she were born at the edge of a river in Uganda, it would be a moment-to-moment of find food to eat and never be eaten. And I just think that parents have such a wonderful opportunity to instill in their children a fascination when they find an animal in the wild, this idea, because most kinds of animals have no interest in people.
Mm-hmm.
But crocodiles
see us as food if we're hanging out at the water edge. But
yes,
I like this
yes.
point, and it comes out in the story that we're discussing today so strongly, the role that parents have in instilling respect for other people, respect for God, respect for creatures.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes children are playing in the yard and one child finds a snake.
Mm-hmm.
How parents react at that moment can make a profound difference in the way children
will react to nature,
exactly,
to the animals around them.
Exactly. And maybe to some tiny degree, when children grow up with a fear for animals, it's this idea that anything is different than what we are, who we are,
is
we
dangerous.
Should be afraid of. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for bringing us Cookie today. And we'd like to thank Cookie for her cooperation out here under the cameras and the lights as well, and for taking us into the world of nature, a tiny little bit more respect that we can have for the world that we share.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
After the break, we'll be back with some special guests. These guests will not live in water and have scales, but they will be helping us as we explore the role of respect in modern life. So stay right with us. We'll be back. Watching TV can be very one-sided. It may seem that I'm doing all the talking and you're doing all the listening, but not on Storyline. Here, you have a voice. We respect your opinions and experience. We want you to be a part of our community. You can call us, text us, find us on Storyline, on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You can download the app or you can subscribe to the HD podcast. We always enjoy hearing how Storyline has impacted your life. And I want to say a big thank you again to all of you who keep in contact with Storyline. We enjoy it. Today, once again, I have wonderful guests joining me on Storyline. I enjoyed having that crocodile. That was a first for me. But now I'm happy to move back to the world of people. We have a couple with us, and they're not complete strangers. At least Dr. Lael Caesar is an associate editor for the Adventist Review and Adventist World magazines. He's also a research professor of the Hebrew Bible at Andrews University, and he has been on Storyline before.
And I'm glad to be here
Very
again.
Very glad to have you
Thank
again
you,
with us.
Thank you, Chantel. Thank you.
And you brought a lovely lady along with you.
This is the significant part of me.
Yes. Well, we're very happy to have Lena with us tonight as well. She teaches speech pathology, so I'm going to have to watch my pronunciation over here, even with my funny accent. And both of them share a love for literature, especially the Bible, because that's more than just a good story. We also have with us Elroy Byam. After graduating from Andrews University, he moved down to here to be with us at Hope Channel as our production assistant with the program, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, Let's Pray. And it's great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on this side of the camera.
Yes, I was going to say, it's good for everyone to get some exposure on this side.
Right, right, right.
That we have more respect for the camera, maybe.
There we go. Yes. There we go.
Well, let's dive into our story this evening.
Sure.
Initially, and I'm probably, hopefully, I don't make the mistake, I mix up those two names that are so similar, Elijah and Elisha. I mean, they both come from more or less the same time period. What are the differences between these two men?
Well, J comes before S, so Ja before Sha, I suppose.
Okay, so there we go. Now, does that confuse me or what?
I almost thought she was talking about our names.
Oh, okay. Lena.
That's also close.
Yes. Well, Elijah was older. He was the senior man, and he was the one who chose Elisha as his apprentice. God, in fact, told him, go and pick Elisha to work with you, for you, and he will succeed you. So
they overlapped a little in their ministry, and then Elisha takes over from Elijah.
From Elijah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay. And so Elijah was the mentor.
Yes.
And I think that if he was looking down to see what Elisha accomplished later in life, he would have been very proud.
Very proud.
Very proud.
We were just, I thought it came out beautifully in our discussion with Michael and the crocodile about this parents teaching their children respect for nature and for the environment, which of course made me think of our story today and the lack of respect. Mm. It's not just the youths we're dealing with. It seems to be a whole cultural problem.
Yes, right. Yes, right. Yeah, because it's difficult to think of the youth being like that all on their own without any backstory, without any context.
So there's obviously a lack of respect.
Mm-hmm. And we thought it was a new thing, but it's as old.
It's as old as this story.
Well, over 2,000 years.
The 9th century before Christ, you know, that's 2,900.
Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun.
History repeats itself.
Let's look a little at the location.
Yes.
It's kind of significant. We've moved from Jericho. We had near Jericho the story of Elijah going up.
Yes.
And then we have Elisha moving, I think there was a school of the prophets in Jericho.
Yes. Yes.
And now he's moving towards...
There was one at Gilgal and one at Bethel.
Sure, okay. Tell us a little bit, what is Bethel known for? I know it's not a new name in the Bible.
A place of worship for sure.
Yeah, Bethel, house of God. It got that name in the Middle Bronze period when the patriarchal era, when Jacob, he was going towards his relatives, going north. And he spent some time...
Is this where he took the stone and made it a pillar?
Yeah, he spent some time in the wilderness there. He woke up the next morning after he had slept with the stone for a pillow. He had had this awesome dream, and he thought, wow, God is here. And that's what Bethel means, house of God. So everything about Bethel is supposed to be good, positive, wonderful, holy.
God's house.
Yes.
Elroy, still God's house at about this time?
It was actually quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a contrast there. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a degradation, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
it's sort of swapping roles.
Swap roles, exactly. So there was a lot of idolatrous worship, mm-hmm. you know, people doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. So,
more than their own thing in this story.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
So we have a lot of contrasts over here. We have this crowd of young people come walking out of the city. Mm-hmm. I was doing a little research. It seems that all these categories that we have, teens, youth, young adults, it also seems to be a fairly new
tweens.
What are tweens? When you're not quite
between
in one.
Between a teen and a...
And a young adult.
And a junior.
Yes,
yes. Okay. So there's more designations out there.
Yes, there are many more.
But I assume that back then there were a whole lot less designations. There was childhood. Was there all this long youth?
You just got initiated at some point, and then you were an adult. at the age of 12,
perhaps,
more or less.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were already expected to take adult responsibilities.
Right. Somewhat. Right. Somewhat. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have at least 42. Well, that's the number of that get mauled in our story over here. So I'm assuming that that didn't happen to all of them. We're in 2 Kings 2,
yes.
mm-hmm. And verse 24, we have 42. So we assume that there must have been a lot more.
Yeah, 42 of them. Right. Yes, that God.
Would this have been kind of normal for such big crowd? I mean, maybe even up to 100 or maybe more?
I mean,
young people hanging out?
Nothing to do.
That's a big gang.
That's a big gang.
And it's amazing what can happen when people are idle. Mm. There's so much trouble that can be born from idleness. Mm-hmm. And there must have been some ringleader there, somebody who started it. Who started it and he had so many followers. Because we don't even know how many there were. Mm-hmm. But for 42 people to be idle in one spot. And I believe that they may have seen all the glorious things that had happened right before this incident took place.
Well, it's not that far away.
No.
Bethel from Jericho. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have been a stretch over here.
Mm-hmm. And I am not so sure they aren't reflecting the society they are growing up in, mm-hmm. because their mockery of the prophet is similar to the attitude of those grown folks who met him first when he came back across the river. Mm-hmm. They kept saying, you don't want to go and look for Elijah? Mm-hmm. Maybe the Spirit threw him on a mountain somewhere. Mm-hmm. So the kids took it further. But they reflected that lack of respect. Mm-hmm.
So this was something that they may have felt at home.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Well, what do you think it would have been like, Roy, hanging out? Do you think this would have been something normal for young people at that time?
Do you know anything about hanging out, Elroy?
Well, I know when I was younger personally, when I was in
You don't have
grade.
Time to hang out anymore. Full job.
Not anymore. I'm working. But when I was younger, I know if I had nothing to do and I had a lot of friends, I don't know about 42 of them, but a good amount of us got together. And when you don't have anything to do, in some ways, you may be looking for trouble. You may be looking for some kind
excitement.
Of action and excitement.
Yes.
Exactly.
This is not biblical. But the devil finds work for idle hands. My mother used to say.
Mm-hmm.
She used to
make
sure that she kept us busy. Yeah. That we
Your mother also
doing something,
which is perhaps not a bad thing.
Maybe not.
It's unusual that these young people don't have something to do. They should be out in the fields helping their fathers.
In an agrarian society, everybody gets involved. Mm-hmm. We have a school system now that is structured the way it is with these long summer breaks because everybody had to be in the field.
Actually working.
At that time, yes.
So this is very strange if we're looking at it in a biblical context. Mm-hmm. All this time for people to be hanging out.
Young people, where all the energy and vigor is.
Nothing to do. Well, I think we'll have to hang out a little bit more on this story.
Okay.
This is getting exciting. We have to take a break, but before we do, we will be discussing when we come back a new aspect. Why does God see disrespect as such a big deal that it gets punished so severely? Stay with us. Right after the break, we'll be contemplating this question. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing the story of Elisha and the disrespectful youths in 2 Kings 2. Well, when we read the story, at least with our modern worldview, the thing that really jumps out is this harsh punishment. And you know, when I read it, I'm inclined to say, why does God react so strongly to the name calling of his prophet? Okay, it is disrespectful, but what's the big deal over here?
Yeah.
I think it hurts us more because it's not hardened criminals who are being punished.
Yeah, these are kids.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And they're young.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're young. And maybe this is their first offense. Why weren't they
right.
pardoned?
Exactly. Oh, well.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. But you know what I think? Mm-hmm. I think that God is serious about his word. Mm-hmm. And so many of the things that we think are so unimportant, they're so insignificant. If God says it's important, he means it. He says, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land. Mm-hmm. They're dishonored, mm-hmm. and their days were short.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Elisha may not have been their father, mm-hmm. but he belonged to their father category.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And when
exactly.
Elijah was going up, Elisha called him my father. My That's father. The expression of mm-hmm. respect mm-hmm. and debt mm-hmm. in the book of Job. Mm-hmm. Elihu is present, and he doesn't say anything for more than 30 chapters because he's a youth. Youth in these traditional societies know that they owe regard and respect. When I was at Andrews University, I had a friend. One day he was from Zimbabwe, I think, mm-hmm. and I saw him walking around with a stick, and I made some comment, you know, it was humorous. He said, boy, I can't walk around like this in my village. Mm-hmm. I cannot pretend to be an old man. It's a lack of respect. I am a boy. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so in these traditional societies, our sense of what happened
would be a little bit different.
Yes, different.
It's much more shocking
exactly.
with this whole culture mm-hmm. of respect.
The offense
respect.
Is entirely more grave mm-hmm. in this context mm-hmm. than we are more inclined to appreciate it.
And it's amazing how so many of them got caught yes. into this loop.
Somebody started it.
Yes, and everyone followed.
Yeah, then the chorus.
Peer pressure. That was what I was going to say. After a while, the whole peer pressure factor. You mm-hmm. know, if you have one person just starting this, but no one decided to say, look, this is wrong.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is an old man, not even right. an old man, but an yes. old man of God.
God.
You know,
God.
But mm-hmm. A lot of people joined in. They were just saying, okay, well, this is exciting. Yeah. If you're going to do it, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what eventually led to their downfall.
Of course, this isn't limited to youth. Mm-hmm. Gang pressure is only gang pressure because it's lots of people, whether they're young or old. Mm-hmm. Crowd psychology is known to be virtually synonymous with insanity. Mm-hmm. We have 25,000 in the book of Acts chapter 19 rushing into a theater. They don't know what they're going for, and they're all screaming
scream for
and rushing.
Hours,
yes, 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
So this idea of the crowd mm-hmm. and determining and deciding on
this
the
comes
basis.
Out very yes. strongly yes. In the story over mm-hmm. here. But let's go on. We've been focusing on the youths. Mm-hmm. Let's look a little bit at Elisha. It's you know, there's the old saying, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me. This doesn't seem to be true in this story. Mm-hmm. Elisha turns around and curses these youths, and of course something happens.
Mm-hmm. You know, it says he turned around and looked at them and pronounced a curse on them in the name of the Lord. Mm-hmm. We could pay individual attention to each of those four clauses. And I think that we are deliberately given that developmental sequence mm-hmm. so that we don't think he was just mad and angry. Shut up! You know, mm-hmm. there was something awesome and awful going on here. And the climax of it is in the name of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can say something?
Yeah.
I was just going to say there was a shift.
Yes.
Yeah. I could just imagine, you know, these youths, if you will, just jeering yes. and following mm-hmm. Elisha out of the city for him to stop.
Yes.
I can imagine him just stopping mm-hmm. and turning. By then I'd be like, okay.
Yes. Yes. So maybe it was time to back off. Huh?
Okay, it's time to relax, you know, so I don't know.
And it showed that they were persistent in their taunting because they were following him. Mm-hmm. They were behind him and they were following him up. He turned around and they were still there. Right. And then he spoke. You know?
That leads me to the next question. We have a lot of talk at the moment in schools, universities, even on the job, about bullying.
Mm-hmm. Bullying is a big deal
now. Does this story feed into the bullying scenario?
Yeah, and we thought that bullying was new. It's a new 21st century phenomenon. But it's not. It's in the Bible. There are three elements of being a bully. Mm-hmm. You've got to be persistent. That persistent and repeated, that nagging. It's almost a nagging, taunting.
This we have in the story.
And this we have in that
story.
Yeah,
it's repetitive. Go up, thou bald head. Go up, thou bald head. Clearly, they were chanting, taunting.
And what there else? Has to be an intent to hurt. Mm-hmm. So even though it sounds, naive that they were just saying, go up, thou bald head, they hadn't cursed him, there was some negative intent to have aggravated the man.
And in your intro, you made the point that there are those who sense the vulgar in this characterization here. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't innocent by any means.
So we have the third element.
The third element is intentional. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't innocent by any means. Mm-hmm. They knew what they were doing. They knew why they were doing it, and they were intending to hurt. Mm-hmm. That's bullying, and it comes straight from the Bible.
So kids can be bullies.
That's right. Absolutely. And here we have bullying an older person.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there's another element that I missed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other element is that usually there is an imbalance of strength. Uh-huh. With the bully being the stronger one and the more authoritative one.
Of their strength in numbers.
Yeah. But here they're with an older man and they're
he's alone.
And he's alone. So they're persisting.
They're persisting, they're bullying.
They're bullying.
They're keeping after him down the road. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the language, you see it in the English, but you read it in the Hebrew, you see, he was going up the road. Mm-hmm. So this is a continuous, and this crowd was probably growing. Mm-hmm. I mean, given what we know of how these things go, it was probably growing. There were more and more idle kids, idle youth hanging around and seeing their friends and joining in, and there were probably a few who really weren't friends, who really knew they didn't belong there, whose mom and dad would have told them to avoid
that company.
But they got drawn in. I don't know how many of them ended up getting mauled, how many of them ran home torn and bewildered and repentant. I don't know.
We hope.
Well, we hope that the repentant clause came in over here. Well, before we dig our teeth any deeper into the story, we have to take a break.
Oh.
But I have a question for you to think about.
Yes.
Okay. You can't make someone love you. Mm. Is respect something like love? Is it something that can be ordered or must it be earned? We'll be right back to discuss this question and more after the break. We've been speaking about Elisha and those disrespectful youths. You know, I almost mixed Elijah and Elisha up again. I'm glad I got the Elisha on again here. We are talking about love and respect now. And we were saying you can't force anyone to love you. Is respect something like love? Is it something you can order or is it something that must be earned?
I'm wondering how many times I've read in the Bible, beloved, let us respect God. I know he deserves respect, but it seems to me that biblically, I don't know, maybe I'm too much into John, but it's always an appeal to love.
An appeal to respect.
And if one follows the other, there are commands to respect, the fifth commandment is for children to respect adults. Mm-hmm. But
I think honoring is kind of built into that word honor, is that notion of respect. But I think that you can respect without loving. I don't know if I believe that you can respect, but I think that in order to love completely, there has to be an element of respect.
I think that there is abroad that sense that I will teach them to respect me. Whereas often enough what it means is I will teach them not to mess with me.
I'll teach them to fear me.
Yeah, I think.
To fear
yeah.
me.
And there goes that fear word, because yes. it's funny. There's fear, I believe, in respect.
Yeah. Mm.
You can, like, for instance, I respect my mother, mm-hmm. you know, and my father out, mm-hmm. out of fear in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. at least at the beginning, I know I was afraid.
There you go. But I would just say, but perfect love casteth out all fear.
Yeah,
so there's no fear in love, but there can be elements of fear in respect.
And as you grow.
Well, if we think back to the Mount Sinai, and when the Israelites were gathered
awesome.
Under the mountain,
yes.
when they saw that display of God's power, mm-hmm. There must have been an element of respect.
They were intimidated. They were frightened. They said, Moses, we can't take this. Mm-hmm. You talk to us, we can't.
But the love hadn't grown yet.
The love hadn't grown yet. And that's what I have seen within my personal experience. Now, in my family, my mom was a disciplinarian.
Mm. That's unusual. It's normally dad.
My dad. Yeah. My dad.
Yeah.
Me.
When my mom looked at you, in fact, when we sat in church, she only had to give us the look mm-hmm. and we straightened up.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But as I grew older, that fear kind of went away. Mm-hmm. And so much more love took its place. Mm-hmm. Now, I still respected her. Mm-hmm. But I think the element that really controlled my relationship was more out of love than out of respect.
Mm-hmm.
But in my love for her, mm-hmm. I respected
thoroughly,
and I
thoroughly.
I hung onto her every word. Mm-hmm. And I think that somewhere we can actually draw a parallel with the way we relate to God. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that's
yes,
that's
parents are surrogate gods. They
That sounds like a strange thing to say.
Yeah, but they are to teach us. Mm-hmm. This is why Jesus says we must call him Daddy, the one above who is Lord of all. Jesus says, when you pray, say, Heavenly Daddy. Mm. We need to understand. The devil has persuaded us that he is a killjoy and a spoiled sport, and we must be frightened, and we better do what he says, or else he throws us into the hot place.
When in respect actual, without love.
Yes. This is the devil's distortion. Mm-hmm. But when we come to understand through getting to know Jesus, we realize what a dear father, what a wonderful daddy our heavenly parent is. So maybe we progress even in our earth-heaven relationships, somewhat like Lena did and I did and Elroy did in our parent relationships.
Okay, well, let's get practical then.
Yes.
How can I develop my respect for a God that I can't see?
You've got to get to know him.
You've
got to get. It's almost impossible to respect someone who you know nothing about.
You can fear him.
You can fear him, but it's still going to be based on some kind of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you really have got to have a relationship with that person to really respect that person, because there is a sense of appreciation. There's a sense of acceptance. There's almost a sense of being secure.
Yeah, you noted that Michael gave Cookie security and freedom.
Yes.
A sense of security and a sense of freedom. Uh-huh. Our
that
God, our God gives us a sense of security and a sense of freedom. And he does both of these the same way Michael was doing by holding. He does it through the law. And the notion that we can have a wonderful love relationship with him while the law is abrogated, done away with, is pretty confounding, inherently contradictory.
Yeah. Yes. We've got to keep remembering that the respect and love are opposite
sides of the,
of the same coin.
And we will relate to our fellow human beings, to kids and adults, to well-known, to beloved folks and family, and to strangers we've never met, if we see that same respect that God has for us and love, we can show it to them.
To others around us.
And love.
Yeah.
Well, which I think is a great way to improve in our society our levels of respect. Because we're really
seeing Jesus in everybody.
Right.
Seeing God. I wouldn't violate, I wouldn't rob, I wouldn't steal, I wouldn't kill if I saw Jesus, if I saw God in those who are otherwise treated as victims.
Well, This has been a fantastic story. It wasn't the easiest story, and I'm glad we had a crocodile help us introduce the
indeed.
Story over here. But I wouldn't want us to finish without giving you an opportunity to take that last gem out of the story. Elroy, what did you enjoy most out of this difficult story?
What I honestly enjoyed out of this two-verse epic tale in the Bible that is often
missed. It is only two verses.
Right. I enjoy the fact that at the end of the day, God wins. God wins. That's it. No matter who mimics you, no matter if it's 42 or 84 or 168, and you can multiply that to kingdom come, God still wins.
Amen.
God still wins. You can turn around. You can look at your enemy or whoever is, you know, putting you under duress, and in the name of Jesus, what do you have to say? And God still wins.
Yes.
We're always in a majority with God.
Ah, absolutely. Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. Thank you, Elroy.
No problem.
Well, I'm reminded, I guess, as a speech language pathologist, of the power of words. The Bible says, by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. And I saw this tension going on between the words of those young people and the words of Elijah. But as Elroy said, God's words won the battle. And if I am on God's side, I will speak his words and I will win.
The power of speech. Okay, we left you with the most difficult problem shortly.
Well, I think there is hope. I think from an instructive story like this, I learn I better know my place. And I trust by the grace of God that as his child, I will fill my place. So instead of receiving his curse, I receive his blessing.
Wonderful. What a lovely conclusion. Well, it has been a real pleasure to be with you this evening and explore this story together.
It's been a joy to
Elroy,
be here. Thank
I
you.
Enjoyed it.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you so much.
This wasn't an easy story, but I felt it was very relevant. If you came in halfway through the program and you missed out on a part of it, don't worry, it's not all lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this episode, and be sure you see our hands-on section with the crocodile. And you can also watch any other episode at your leisure. If you want to share your reaction to the story, please go to our website or post on Facebook and Twitter. Remember, Storyline is available in the iTunes stores as a podcast. Now, don't go anywhere. There's still more right after the break. When I was 3 years old, I showed a great fascination for the stove. The red hot glow under the pot seemed particularly fascinating. In my carefully sheltered life, I hadn't developed any sense of respect for stoves. My mother tried everything with me. She tried explaining and warning. She even tried childproofing the stove. But I showed remarkable ingenuity with chairs, and I had a determination to get to that stove. My big goal in life seemed to be to put my hand on that red glow. Finally, in desperation, my mother took my one little finger and touched it to a warm, but not red hot, plate. That was enough. A slight blister, and I learned respect. Elisha's story is not an easy one, but I'm grateful that the story is recorded for me. It's so easy to let pride and selfishness show itself in disrespect for any form of authority. Too often I forget that love and respect are two sides of the same coin. To disrespect others, and especially God, it's a warning that something is wrong with my love relationship. I'd like to invite you to put your storyline into the hands of a God you can trust, love, and always respect.